Hello and welcome to our University of Strathclyde podcast series, run out of the world-famous School of Education, right in the heart of the beautiful city of Glasgow in Scotland. We bring you a mix of meeting academic interviews, thought pieces, conversations and provocations on all things education, to give you a glimpse into our world-leading education research here at Strathclyde, and of course to stimulate your questions and thinking around the meaning, purpose and practice of education. In schools, in communities, and of course in all our lives.
Hello, I'm Maria Ivancheva, and for today's episode of the Strathclyde School of Education podcast, we have the pleasure to have with us Harvey Humphrey and Yvette Taylor, who are going to speak to us about a recent event which Harvey organized, which was Who's Here, Who's Queer, Making Space for Queer Early Career Researchers in Academia Through Collective Discussions and Creative Practices. But before we start, as both me and Yvette have been guests of this podcast before, but Harvey, you haven't, can you tell us just a bit about your work and then we can speak about the event that you organized recently?
So I'm at the University of Strathclyde on an ESRC postdoctoral fellowship considering ethics, ethnodrama and representation. This kind of consolidates like publications and knowledge exchange events from my PhD, including a play performance based on the ethnodrama in the thesis. So in 2021, I completed a PhD in sociology at the University of Glasgow, addressing trans and intersex activist relationships in Australia, Malta and the UK with the use of ethnodrama, like writing a play. So a lot of my thinking right now is about that kind of ethical work of representing others and the kind of ethics of dissemination. I'm thinking through how that play context offers a kind of interesting example of that work that we all face as like broadly speaking sociological researchers. Before joining Strathclyde, I worked at Northumbria University with the excellent Ned Coleman Fountain as a senior research assistant on the Supporting Sexualities and Genders project, improving personal support in relation to kind of gender and sexuality for young disabled adults who employ personal assistants. That project is ongoing and is super cool. Previous stuff, I've kind of published a bit on methodologies and on kind of queer creative stuff and theoretical work broadly relating to kind of queer, LGBTI and disabled lives, kind of me.
Great. So can you tell us a bit about the Making Space workshop first? Are you as a co-organizer and then Yvette as one of the invited speakers and participants?
So for me, as an organizer, this workshop was about thinking through what it is to be an out queer and trans researcher at the beginning of their career, at a time when it feels like UK academia is a particularly unpleasant place to be an out trans person. And it can feel quite isolating, especially in the context of the pandemic, but also in the context of precarious working situations. So Making Space was about bringing people together to share those experiences, not just to critique the current situation, although we definitely did that, but to try and create a different kind of academic space, one in which we felt we could bring our whole selves to. So I got together with the fabulous Hazel Marzetti at Edinburgh, and we applied for some money from the British Sociological Association, which we spent sending people craft kits and Lego in the post. And we invited the brilliant Yvette Taylor, also from Strath, and the excellent Ruth Pearce, who's at Glasgow. And together we just set about thinking through like what, and just creating those different kind of academic spaces, one that was about queer joy, queering what is academic writing, queering career trajectories, queering academic CVs, and trying to make the kind of academic spaces and networks that we think should exist.
Great. And Yvette, what was your experience and your involvement?
Yeah, so I mean, as a speaker, I was really pleased to be invited and I'm pleased that the BSA had funded the event. My talk was called Making or Taking Space, Queer Claims and Entitlements. And in it, I wanted to think about who we are as queer feminists in the space that we make and take. So what do we carry with us in our embodied journeys and in beyond academia? What weighs on us? How do we carry our queer claims and entitlements? And whose personal biography becomes evidence of failure or of making it? And we can think about this as a career trajectory with long histories likely, including preceding our own entries to higher education. So what about compulsory education? We can think about the imagined ideal ECR, not all ECRs are in the same position, or the idealized student destined for future leadership, for postdoc investments, or the celebrated global academic ever transcending the local boundaries. But I think academic journeys, whether PhD starts, progressions, completions, or otherwise, are not linear, and that they can be creative ways to politicize and complicate that non-linearity. So does making space even creatively mean taking it, and for whom and from whom? And does taking or making space generate its own patterns or and inequalities? And how might we make queerer our own entitlements beyond our entitlements as queer? So I wanted to kind of stretch who we're imagining when we're saying queer, and troubling that too, when I think queer space is already seen by normative institutionalized space as already small, already specialist or niche. It might be seen as a risky subject for at-risk subject, and it might be seen as a gloss over divisions within queer politics and presences. So I think that space, the workshop in Harvey and Hazel in particular, held up that space and that tension and made it possible to rethink these questions again.
That's great. And so you mentioned creative practice. So in your and in the participants' terms, what constitutes creative practice, and why is it useful, necessary, or political within the confines of contemporary neoliberal academia?
So like sometimes we are researching topics that we have a personal and political connection to, and sometimes those are topics that might be sensitive or difficult to talk about, whether that's for us as researchers or for participants. And sometimes they involve drawing on those personal connections that we have to queer communities and to queer lives. And for me, sometimes something is lost in the process of writing a purely academic text. Like some of the language of queer life just kind of loses some of that emotional connection, some of that raw life as it is lived. And particularly as you kind of edit your work, as it goes through peer review, there's a bit of distance that's created. And for me, that creative work can bring back and embrace some of that connection to real queer lives, reconnecting myself as a researcher. And sometimes there are things that are easier to say and easier to read in, say, poetry than in the more detached language of an academic text. And obviously not all academic texts are so detached or written without emotion, but creative work can really embrace that power of the personal and the political and say something that maybe sticks with you in a different way.
So the workshop really gave me the space to work creatively, and I with others produced my own feminist box, which is still up in my shelves, and it's complete with glitter, pipe cleaners, scraps of notes, thoughts and headlines and so on. And I think that does say something about queer feminist creativity, and is always implicated in wider patterns of production, reproduction and politics. So fortunately or unfortunately, there's always a headline, right, to grab. And I think it is important, necessary and useful that we grab them and work with them. And sometimes I think that literally means moving things around, sticking and unsticking respective parts. And so one of the things that I really liked about the workshop is that we were forced to rewrite in a way our own words, knowing that we'd have to share them. How can I say my words more succinctly? What essentially is it I'm trying to do and say in these words? So I did a search through my own key terms, and I answered back and spoke against my words. And I thought that was a good way to unstick myself for being too in the academic text. So I think being, doing, thinking creatively can usefully keep questions in mind of for who and for what. And in that sense, I think it's a response to the normative or unqueer or unfeminist classroom that already assumes its audiences and already assumes its address and as aligned. And I think there's a long history of creative feminist classroom practice as surpassing academic spaces too.
Mm-hmm. And just a side note maybe, but you know, something that came to my mind while we were speaking was the question of places. Like, until now, I think you're speaking about it more symbolically and in terms of text, But I guess once you bring the classroom in, it can also connect to actual spaces, physical spaces that we dwell in academia. And I'm just wondering, now that the COVID pandemic has been around and it is mentioned in the description of the event, was there something new that was brought more challenging or less challenging to the possibility of queering spaces in academia, in the built environment of the contemporary university?
So I think for me and Hazel, we kind of always thought this was going to be an online event because of the context of the pandemic, but it really opened up who it was kind of possible for, who was going to be there. And so it was internationally attended, whereas perhaps it might have been more of a regional event, which then really opened up the kind of conversations we were having and who was there and who kind of even felt welcome in that kind of space. And so as much as we kind of pitched it for an early queer researcher, those kind of boundaries of those definitions were stretched, and there were kind of PhD students and people who felt like a queer space within universities was something that they wanted to be part of, were people that were welcome, and we weren't that confined by definitions of boundaries of kind of who counts as an ECR, but also the boundaries of geography of, you know, who happens to be in Glasgow or who was able to get to Glasgow. And I suppose that's maybe speaks to something that's a kind of bigger issue about kind of what is a university space and who is a university space for. And you know, for me, there's nothing massively queer about those big shiny buildings or the kind of endlessly mystifying processes of forms and committees. But universities are so much more than a collection of committees with confusing acronyms or shiny buildings. They are their staff and their students and research participants. And I think for me, that's where the possibilities of queer space exist. And sometimes that is with colleagues like Yvette, who work in the same institution and have kind of decades of experience of queer research and making space in academia. But I've also found this stuff exists outside of maybe specific institutions. So I'm part of something called the Queer Disability Studies Network, which seeks to make a kind of queer space that challenges the transphobia in disability studies and challenges the ableism in queer studies, and maybe seeks to allow for queer, trans and disability studies to kind of speak to each other. And because we have so much to learn from each other as disciplines, but also kind of bringing in more of a, say, an activist connection. And maybe what felt welcoming about the Making Space workshop and about QDS is that we aren't explicitly tied to kind of one institution or university. It's more about finding your people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can look at these things optimistically and pessimistically, or with, you know, educated hope, to use the words of queer thinkers. And it's not naive optimism, like how do we get beyond this moment of crisis, but rather as a return to knowing that we can and do challenge as part of an ongoing crisis and challenge. And as part of an imagining of a better future that often seems and is out of reach when viewed from our present circumstances. So I think queer space in academia, as I think that Harvey was saying there, is more than just space for queers for the LGBT History Month, for example. And many of whom have, you know, like myself, taken part in and beyond such inclusions over decades. And, you know, by that I mean, by that reminder of the past and the present, I mean, again, to point to these as being repetitions over long-term struggles rather than single moments of, you know, this binary of complicity, so being in part of the capitalist institution, or as a moment of subversion, being a queer. And I think they're more complicated than that. And I'm compelled to think about doing feminism as a practice rather than simply being a queer feminist, for example, in the work of production and reproduction being done over the long term, including in our classrooms, our classroom commitments, and our methodological choices.
And so what are the challenges and joys of creating queer spaces as academics and perhaps as academic activists? You spoke a bit about that right now, but what are the activities and spaces you engage in your own work to make this happen as a sustained practice over time?
Yeah, so I guess as much as I'm like, yeah, we're outside of institutions and universities, they'll absolutely claim it as a win if we do something they like, and there'll be lots of fun things happening for, say, in LGBT History Month, and then maybe not so much the next month. And it's absolutely, you know, all over my CVs and covering letters when I apply for jobs. But equally, I think that institutional support might evaporate if we do something that they consider controversial. And I think those are challenges as well. And I think some of the joy is perhaps linked to some of the ways in which it feels more like kind of activist academic work, and perhaps you can kind of challenge some of the power and hierarchies. And I think getting back to what Yvette was saying about those kind of like feminist practices in the classroom and the ways that it's about kind of doing and not just being, and feeling like it's a place where staff and students can kind of bring themselves, but also kind of bring those challenges and bring those difficult questions. And yeah, that's maybe a, both a challenge and a joy of those kind of queer academic practices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I want to challenge, in the spirit of queering, questioning binaries, that divide that's often articulated between, say, activist and academic life, or, you know, real life versus the academic one, which is inevitably elite or self-serving or not real. And I think that's untrue for many of us. And again, feminists have long questioned that separation of private-public worlds. And that, again, really animated by the pandemic, where our life is in the background and overlaps on the screen. But I think it has always been thus. And I understand that you're asking me in part about practical strategies, about the kinds of activities we do when we hyphenate academic activism. And one of the last events that I did in person before lockdown was at Glasgow Women's Library, and it was a queer class workshop, and in it we heard from the library co-founders about the possibility of creating a feminist archive over time, and how that venue had moved, and, you know, it was held up by heavy labour. So again, I don't idealise that at all, and I've just submitted an edited collection. I've already told you, Maria, it's called Queer Precarities In and Out of Higher Education, with co-editors Mats Brim and Charnjeet Mann, who were at that workshop, and it provokes on what queer precarities look like and how queers are pushed out of education as staff and students, but how they also push back and they live with and through precarity. And in that collection, queer scholars, educators, practitioners do propose alternative communities of action, scholarship and practice. And again, that's work in the making, that's the doing.
Yeah, and so, you know, you touched upon this a bit, but there is a question, especially now with precarity becoming the norm rather than the exception within Western academia, which was one of the last protected spaces, well, formerly for white, able-bodied, you know, middle-class men, obviously. But we're now in the middle of a dispute, in fact, two disputes, one about pensions and one so-called Ford Fights dispute that University and Colleges Union is dedicating to precarity, to casualization. And it is interesting, where do you see the kind of intersection between queer precarity, which has mostly been a norm, sadly, and this kind of newly emerging, rather contractual labor precarity that academics are facing? Is there potential, or is it a limiting kind of predicament to be facing this intersecting precarity?
So there's a range of ways that it's maybe a difficult time to work in higher education, and it kind of made reference to the kind of rising transphobia across particularly the UK and university setting in the UK. And I think coupling that with the kind of broader issues of precarity and casualization and pay gaps and pension cuts that are absolutely going to hit early career researchers really hard, but actually, you know, hit a range of people currently working not just in academia but across higher education. And I don't necessarily really have the answer to any of these questions, other than kind of solidarity across not only these fights but the fights to come. But also, I wrote a poem on the first day of the strike. I suppose about how I felt about all of these things, because sometimes it's easier to put stuff in poems. So I'm just going to share that with you, if that's all right. And it's called Outside. I went out for a walk, and it smelled like rain when it's dried, and freshly mown grass and sticky sweet lollipops. Slowly breathing in, holding in air of the outside, taking time out and everything, it just stops. Nothing is that urgent, immediate. It can all wait. Let go of the stress twisting up throughout my colon. Now nothing needs completing at this alarming rate. Feels like time and solidarity were stolen. I'm here on the outside. We are here on the outside, standing out here without money or resources. We are standing here together all on the outside, stronger in solidarity, joining forces. You are always welcome to join us.
Well, I don't know if I can match that. I echo everything Harvey said there. And I think these are long-term struggles. And from my first permanent position at Newcastle in 2005, I've seen and been part of strike action. So the question of sustainability, politically, collectively, individual, is a really serious one. And it's not solved by individualized instructions to take care or be kind. And I think in mainstream space, such as in policy or institutional spaces, queer academics take risks and often in ways that surpass that binary of non-academic, activist, academic language in ways that I've mentioned. So for me, the question is how to keep going. And I see these politicized questions circulating as questions of careers, questions of carers, a question of mentorship, leadership, intersectional queer feminist movements, trade union movements. And within this, I'm concerned about sort of individualizing queer careers or carers to be solved by the right amount of mentorship or the right amount of support or emotional labor. And I've said this to Harvey and Maria. And to you too, I have no desire to be that academic mother figure. Where would that take us and what would that solve? But I do have a desire for a collectivized response with and through our queer cares and queer careers as we make and take space for all. So this is work. And thinking about this for this podcast, I thought I would bring in one quote from an interviewee for the Working Class Queers Project that I'm currently still writing furiously for. And so it always lingers in the background. And if I bring this quote to the front, because I think it really animates and contradicts the call out in being and doing the work, or who, in other words, would want, who wants the queer feminist to succeed. So this person says, you can always tell a real working class person because they want to be middle class, not the culture of middle class, but they want a good salary and they want money and they don't disdain those things. I've got colleagues who'll be like, everybody should be paid the same, and I used to say all that stuff as well, but it'll be working class job applicants at senior level who'll be like, no, you pay me my salary. Do you know what I mean? I crawled over cut glass to get here, pay me my salary. It's only middle class people that romanticize being poor. I mean, I'm still absolutely wildly disordered about money because I've been under-resourced and neglected in childhood. Like I have, if my bank card goes out of date and it beeps and doesn't run, I have a full-blown panic attack, and I'm 48 years old, and if there's no money in my bank account. So, you know, I think we all have these moments of empathising or over-empathising with our interviews, and I thought for me that's a really powerful moment of going back and forward between and going inside and outside of academia and asking the question, what drives us forward when we hear that beep, right?
So, speaking about forward, what are we looking forward to in terms of, you know, your work, in terms of what we are all involved in, the Spring Intro Methods Feminist Research in Action workshop organized by the University of Edinburgh, and even like the gender subteam that you had and you have so generously invited me to co-chair with you.
So yeah, the Spring Intro Methods kind of feminist, doing feminist research in action workshop. I have a small contribution to that about kind of queering academic writing and kind of thinking through this work of kind of rewriting work as poems. And I'm really excited about that because I do think people really respond to that as a practice about kind of thinking through something you've already written and kind of what can you think through differently with that. I'm doing a session for the Haas grad school here on data representation and fictionalization, thinking through composite characters, and hopefully doing a similar workshop apart from the as part of the SDSSS summer school called Making Things Up as Ethical Practice, and kind of again thinking through some of that work of kind of, yeah, what is ethical work, what is it to fictionalize something, all the kind of ethical implications of that. And I think it brings out really interesting conversations from participants, and I'm really excited to have those conversations, and I don't have all the answers. In terms of the Making Space workshop, we had some kind of follow-up catch-ups with people. The last one was just kind of an informal one about queer joy, and we all kind of wrote a response to how we felt about queer joy, which was really nice. We've got one coming up. We're using the boxes that we made and thinking through whether you could kind of use boxes of Lego and craft and post-it notes as a strategy for planning writing. And going forward, there was some talk about kind of using this as a space for kind of skill sharing. But it's more just an informal space to kind of bring your whole self really and feel like a space to be.
Mm-hmm. Maria, maybe you could say something about your session at the Spring Into Methods. I think that is exactly a space that makes space and is generative. So it'd be super cool to hear more about your session. I just flag up maybe the Feminist Research Network. It's something that I established and co-organized with colleagues ever since. At Strathclyde since 2016, and the next seminar is on the 11th of May, and it's called The Smoke and Mirrors of Performing Diversity, Institutional Reputation, Individual Burden and Distraction from Accountability. So it touches on a lot of the things we've been talking about today, and that's by Jess Gagnon and colleagues.
Right, and so I will be joining the Spring Into Methods school, and my session would be on ethics and some issues that Harvey also touched upon, especially coming from my background as anthropologist, you know, what does anonymity mean, especially in times when we might interview people in a lot of power. Yeah. What does it mean to protect research participants? Who do we protect them from? And coming from the background of, you know, where did medicalized ethics start taking kind of hold of social sciences ethics because of all the kind of misplaced experiments that were done on Indigenous people, on women, and on vulnerable individuals. Now we as social science researchers have to fit in a norm that's made for quite different type of experimental sciences. So my task would be to challenge some of the participants to kind of think back in history and think creatively through their own ethical applications and how they can deal with that within the current conjuncture where ethics, with all its benevolence, has become more of a straight metal jacket on us. So thank you very much for this. I'm looking forward maybe to see you again on the podcast, and definitely to see you very soon in real life and online.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening in to our Strathclyde Education podcast series. We'll be back soon with another episode.